Now it is time for another episode of the Longhorns Big 12 Country Podcast. Let's do this thing. What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to another edition of the Longhorns Big 12 Country Podcast Football Edition. I am your host for tonight, Sky, one third of the Longhorns Big 12 Country page, where I am the lead hoops writer, but I also do some football too. So wherever you may be listening, however you may be listening, thank you everybody for making us a part of your evening, and we are glad to have you join me here tonight. So first of all, I'm normally going to start off with my usual segment of I'm here to tell you not what you want to hear, but what you need to hear. But I want to say something that I want you all to hear first. And that being, as you all know, about 10 days ago, I got robbed from two young black guys who tricked me into basically stealing my phone by claiming that I took photos of them, which I didn't, but I'll address this topic in my Real Time with Sky podcast, which will be debuting here soon. But I wanted to take this time to tell each and every single one of you, thank you for the last week, for your kind words. It has not been easy. Sorry about that. I got to turn that ESPN crap off. Got to turn my phone to silent. But my backup one, that is. Your kind words have been really amazing, and just I'm really thankful for each and every single one of you, that being Longhorn Nation and, of course, my Big 12 Country brothers. So from the bottom of my heart, thank you, guys. I am just now trying to recover from that. Again, I will address this more in my Real Time with Sky podcast, so stay tuned for that. But, as always, I am thankful for each and every single one of you guys. And as long as I'm still here, I am here to give you guys the best and Longhorn coverage and analysis when I can. So, from the bottom of my heart, thank you all, and I love you guys from the bottom of my heart. And, going forward, I'm just looking forward to, you know, being with all of you guys and giving you guys the best coverage. So I just wanted to make that clear really quick. So with that being said, Nation, as always, I'm here to tell you not what you want to hear, but what you need to hear. And for tonight's episode, what you need to hear is, believe it or not, I am on Earl Thomas's side. And what I mean by that is, in case some of you didn't already know, Earl Thomas, Longhorn great from the great DBU years, now Seattle Seahawk free safety, is out for the year. He suffered a fractured foot injury, his second one within, I think, 3 to 4 years. On Sunday, during a win at Arizona. But that's really not the situation. The situation was Fox cameras caught him as he was getting carted off, giving a middle finger to the Seahawks sideline. So, there have been a mix of back and forth regarding that. And I thought it was very interesting. So that is why it is part of my I am not here to tell you what you want to hear. I'm here to tell you what you need to hear segment. So first of all, earlier in the summer, Earl Thomas held out from training camp, and basically all of the Seahawks' off-season activities, because he wanted to get paid a new contract, but also he wanted the financial security because he legitimately loved Seattle. And plus, he knew he was getting older, and he's getting, every year he's getting one step closer to the end of the road for his NFL career. So, I normally am not a fan of players having egos, but in the case of Earl Thomas, believe it or not, I am actually on his side. But I'm especially on any player's side who wants the financial security in the place that they love. And, you know, Earl Thomas legitimately loved Seattle. And I am on Earl Thomas' side here because, A, he was a part of the reason where Seattle won their first Super Bowl. Part of the legendary, or once legendary, Legion of Boom secondary in Seattle. And while as, you know, Cam Chancellor may have retired, or after Richard Sherman's Achilles injury last year, and then he ultimately ended up bolting for San Francisco, Earl Thomas sticked around because he wanted to show his loyalty to the only team that gave him a home and a shot in the NFL. And, you know, he already suffered a foot injury several years ago. And I can understand that if you're in a place that you legitimately love because, you know, you built a life there or you built something amazing there. You know, a family, you know, a foundation, or, you know, you basically have, you know, your post-college and your entire NFL career in a place. And from some of the stuff I read, Earl Thomas loved Seattle. And the fact that he decided to come back and show loyalty to a team, especially Seahawks owner Paul Allen, despite him not paying Earl Thomas, you know, I gotta give Earl Thomas respect. And because of the fact that this is the last year of his contract, I think Earl Thomas got the short end of the stick here, you know? Because now he feels like he came back for nothing for them to just get a foot up the butt. And he has another serious foot injury. And with the fact that he is expected to hit free agency after the NFL season, I think he got screwed here. So, let me explain it here. If a player like Earl Thomas has been loyal to your organization for basically his entire career, there is one way to fix that. You pay the player. You don't just say, oh, we're going to wait and see, you know. You pay the player. Do I think you should pay Earl Thomas, like, top defensive player in the league kind of money? No. Von Miller money? No. J.J. Watt money? Hell no. Xavier Rhodes for Minnesota money? Oh, definitely hell no. Khalil Mack money? No. No, 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 no. You do not. But you pay him enough to let him know that we want you here and we understand that you built a life here. Because from what I've seen the last couple of years, the Seahawks are not giving Russell Wilson any offensive line help or any running game help. Because I got to tell you, Russell Wilson is not going to be able to do everything by himself forever. And if If general manager John Schneider and owner Paul Allen think that, oh, Russell Wilson is going to be Seattle Superman, I'm sorry, you're just plain and simple wrong. Now, they should count their lucky stars that because Russell Wilson is not a guy of ego, there is a good chance he retires he spends his entire career in Seattle. There is a good chance of that. But the thing is, you know, the Seahawk fans or Seahawk Nation, they're going to get tired of the way this team is being ran currently. Especially if, you know, John Schneider and Paul Allen don't address the offensive line and the running game issues for Russell. You know, because if Russell gets hurt, if Russell Wilson gets hurt, along with the fact that Seattle doesn't have a super elite defense anymore, I'm going to tell you right now, Seattle will finish last any season going forward, unless they can find a way to fix the damn problems. And that's why you needed Earl Thomas. You absolutely need Earl Thomas in Seattle. A, because as he's getting closer to the end of his career, you know, you're going to have to start rebuilding. B, because you don't have the defensive coordinators from the, oh my God, Seahawks are the most scariest defense in the league days, and Gus Bradley. Why did I say Gus Allen? Maybe I'm thinking Jarrett Allen. But, you know, Gus Bradley or Dan Quinn, you don't have them anymore. So, you know, if Seattle were to finally start beginning the rebuild to rebuild that defense to set up for the future, you know, you're going to need a leader who knows very well how the defense is ran, you know, and to teach him all the formations and the signals. And that's what Earl Thomas could be. But Seattle is, I don't know what the hell they're doing. But personally, I think it's disgusting that Seattle is treating Earl Thomas the way that they did. And honestly, Earl, I'm rooting for you. I hope you get back soon. And, you know, it's obvious to me you are not returning to Seattle. I am absolutely rooting for the Dallas Cowboys to sign Earl Thomas because, let's face it, the match made in heaven has been discussed for a while. And then I got a message to general manager John Schneider and owner Paul Allen. I'm just going to tell you right now, Earl Thomas isn't coming back. And as long as the Rams have Todd Gurley, Jared Goff, and that booming, amazing defense with Aqib Talib, Marcus Peters, and Dominican Sue, Tremaine Brock, and most importantly, Aaron Donald, and then San Francisco, if they can improve their defense and give Jimmy G some help for once he gets back, I'm just going to say right now, Seattle, you ain't making the damn playoffs. So, you know, my main point is, before I close this part up, is if a player like Earl Thomas has been loyal to your organization, you help the man out. He still can't perform at a high level. But now, because of this second foot injury, he may not be the same anymore. And, you know, he wants to have his family set up. And I respect that. And I respect, you know, if he has a life, like a pretty fulfilling life outside of NFL in Seattle, you know. And plus, there's a major difference between a player who, you know, has been loyal to the organization and, like, Earl Thomas. And then there's something in the case of, like, Odell, you know. Let's be clear here. The major difference is Odell just wants to get paid so then he can continue his little partying days. Going to Miami during bye weeks or during the week of practice. Or doing or having women in his bed. Or whatever. And the thing is, when it matters most, Odell has not shown up. But Earl Thomas has shown up. The one thing I do not agree with, give me just a second, I'm drinking my water here, is when Earl was carted off, I'm wondering who he gave the middle finger to. Did he give the middle finger to the entire team for not sticking up for him? Did he give it to Pete Carroll for not sticking up to him? Or for him. Did he give it to Russell Wilson for not sticking up for him? Or did John Schneider and Paul Allen come down to the sidelines at some point that game and he noticed them and he said, you know what? I came back for you guys. Screw you guys. You know, this is what I get. And now I may not be able to sign anywhere, but like, maybe like Dallas or if a crappy team wants me. I think it's disgusting. You know, but, you know, the coach doesn't pay you. Your teammates don't pay you your check. It's the general manager and the owner. So if he did that to Paul Allen and John Schneider, I get it. And I don't blame him. I mean, who could? But as long as Earl knows that he will go down as a Hall of Famer, and as long as he knows he did the very best he could, then I cannot blame him for being upset. So, Earl, the nation is praying for you. And, you know, I just wish you well, man. And I hope to be seeing you on an NFL field again before you retire. And, I hope to see you back next year. So, anywho, now on to the main point of tonight's episode. Tonight's episode is the post-Texas versus Kansas State. And this is the fourth win in a row since we lost the opener to Maryland. And while as this is not a ranked team, this is a big deal because this is our first win in Manhattan since 2002, if I'm not mistaken. Somewhere, I think 2001 or 2002. I'll have to check and I'll clarify it on my Twitter or on our team page Twitter. But before I go into some analysis or my thoughts on this past Saturday's game from what I saw, because I was in and out. I got the game leaders right here in front of me. So, for the Texas game leaders, it was Sam Ehlinger with 29 for 36 completions, 207 yards and one touchdown. The lead rusher was none other than Keontae Ingram, 10 for 68 yards. And then the lead receiver was Colin Johnson with 4 receptions for 51 yards and a touchdown. And then, for Kansas State, the leaders were Skylar Thompson, 8 for 18 with 96 yards, but no touchdowns. Alex Barnes with 19 carries for 80 yards and a touchdown. And Schoen for 5 receptions and 67 yards. So, my thoughts, so a couple of key plays as well, and in case anybody is, crap, give me a second here, hold on just a second, my Galaxy tablets where I had all my notes are screwing up on me, so give me a second. So while I am trying to hold on, everything's messing up on me here. Okay, there we go. All right, so while I'm trying to get my notes back up, one thing that I was going to critique is Chris Boyd needs to stop blowing coverages. I'm officially putting out an APB for Chris Boyd. I don't know what is going on with him, but the fact that every single game, he seems to give up a assignment or a big coverage play. Okay, I don't know if my stuff has virus here. I apologize, everybody. My Galaxy tablet, where I have my notes, is screwing up on me. So, I apologize. Okay, here we go. But I'll address some of the scoring or key plays here in just a minute. But back to the Chris Boyd thing. Every single game for the last 2 years, he seems to, at one point or another, blow an assignment and blow a coverage. If you are a freshman or even a sophomore, I understand that. Especially because you're trying to learn. But in the case of Chris Boyd, what are you doing? You're a senior. You're a senior, man. You're a senior, and this is your second year in Todd Orlando's defense. This is not what a senior defensive back is supposed to do. It really is not, and it is disgusting. Every time I see that, me and some of my people who message me the same thing I'm thinking, is thinking, what the hell is Chris Boyd doing? What the hell is Chris Boyd doing? What are you doing, man? If you're a freshman, I understand. But if you're a senior, especially in the second year of your defensive coordinator, where you should know the system from soup to nuts and candies and butts by now, you got a problem, man. You got a problem. And you will not make it in the NFL if this is who the Chris Boyd is. You just won't. Now, outside of Chris Boyd always finding a way to blow coverages or man-to-man assignments, you know, at least once or twice, I thought everybody else did okay. Now, you know, a lot of people were upset that as soon as Alex Delton went out and Skylar Thompson came in and finished the game, the defense kind of slowed down a little bit and, you know, gave Kansas State some momentum. But I'm here to tell you right now that at first I was a little irritated about it. But now that, you know, I think about it, you know, when Tom Herman and Todd Orlando were going over the game plan this past week, I don't think anybody accepted for Skylar Thompson to be easy. And, you know, I don't think anybody expected for Alex Delton to, you know, get hurt. But that's just the way football goes. That still doesn't change the fact that the defense, you know, needs to always be prepared for anything. But I also see the other side of this point. And, you know, just, yeah. Now, as for the offense, that's where I'm wondering what the hell happened to the offense. Did Sam turn the ball over again this weekend? From what I saw, no. Once again, he didn't. Once again, he really did not. And when it mattered most, Sam led us to a win. Some of his passes were very, very, very inaccurate. And, you know, and as everybody knew from earlier this past week, Tim Beck was hospitalized with an elbow infection, and he had to get recovery and did not make the trip to Manhattan. So Tom Herman and Herb Hand ended up, from what I believe, called the plays this past weekend. And for some weird reason, the last couple of weeks, Tim Beck's play calling, or whatever has been going on when Tim Beck was there, all of a sudden is working. For now, I still need to see it more. But the offense kind of slowed down this past week. Some of Sam's passes were inaccurate. Holding the ball for too long. The plays were a little bit conservative, which in a case like, I am just watching something very, very graphic on WWE. Any WWE fans out there, if y'all know who Randy Orton and Ty Dillinger are, Randy Orton just put Ty Dillinger's finger through something in the turnbuckle, and he is bending it backwards, and oh my God! Nation, I am so sorry, this is just too good not to miss. Yeah, it's pretty graphic. Yeah, I'll get back to that here in just a second, but yeah, it is really graphic. And if I am not mistaken, Derek is probably watching this right now too, and he's probably thinking the same thing. Sorry, I got distracted. So, back to the offense. There were times where I wondered, are we actually better right now with Tim Beck than with Tom Herman and Herb Hand? And anybody who says that argument, is probably right. And, if Tim Beck can show me this even more, then great. I am all ears. I'll change my stance on Tim Beck. But until he does this consistently, and this continues with the potential revival of Texas being back, I'm still going to have my questions about Tim Beck. But my thoughts on the play calling this week. I thought it was a little bit shaky, and it would not surprise me, especially with OU on the horizon this week. It would not surprise me with Tim Beck being back. I think we legitimately will be ready, and especially with the fact that I know that some of our seniors, like Chris Boyd, PJ Locke, Gary Johnson, Breckenhager, or Colin Johnson, they all want this win. But to be honest with you, this again, shocker, I think our offense is better with Tim Beck right now. For now, I need to see it keep up. But yeah, I just thought the offense was pretty shaky. The one thing about this offense that I legitimately liked was when Keyontae Ingram, our freshman running back, is in the game. As I posted on my Twitter account multiple times, I'm going to say it again. And in case you all didn't already know just yet, earlier this summer, I was on the Raspy Voice Kids podcast with good friends of Big 12 Country, Brandon and Jeremy Phoenix, who are the Phoenix Bros. And I was doing a segment with Brandon to preview West Virginia, and he asked me who I thought my breakout player was on offense. And I told him Keyontae Ingram. And honestly, I did not expect that. I did not expect to be right. And every time he's in the game, he always does amazing things. I mean, that doesn't mean that everything is going to be perfect. Nothing is ever perfect. But every time he's in the game, he always finds a way to make plays happen. Whether it's catching passes out of the backfield, finding holes in space and in finding gaps, basically making plays with what his line gives him or what our offensive line gives him. And, he hasn't turned the ball over yet. He's definitely not Trey or Daniel Young or Tonnell Carter. Because I got to tell you something. After that spring game where Daniel Young and Tonnell Carter fumbled multiple times, I was like, get the hell out of here. get the hell out of here with that. I don't want two guys who have butterfingers holding on to the ball. And so I decided to take a home run with saying Keyonte Ingram is going to be the best back on this team. And so far, I have been right. But, you know, I said it before and I'll say it again. Keyonte Ingram is the best back on this team. And so far, I have been right. Trey Watson has been okay. He's definitely good as a number two or as a one when Keyonte Ingram is out. But let's face it. When Keyonte Ingram is healthy, Keyonte Ingram needs to be the starting running back. And if Tom Herman, Tim Beck, or Herb Hand cannot see that going forward when he's 100% healthy, then they obviously don't know coaching like they think they do. So, yeah. So, now for a couple of key plays that I thought decided this game. For starters, oh crap, my Galaxy tablet is messing up again, or I think it's the ESPN app. For starters, in case anybody missed the game, here are the scoring plays recap. Give me just a second here. Hang on. If this thing loads. Also, side note, I have Spectrum, and sometimes Spectrum just loves to mess up on me, internet-wise. And it gets frustrating at times. It gets really, really frustrating. So, you know, I don't know if it's that, if it loads here. Okay, here we go. So, a couple of the scoring plays. Come on. All right, so in the first quarter, Deshaun Jameson, 90-yard punt return. Colin Johnson, 4-yard touchdown. Sorry, that's the second quarter. Colin Johnson, 4-yard pass from Sam Ehlinger. Then a Texas team safety makes it 16-0. Dicker the kicker, 28-yard field goal. Skylar Thompson, 7-yard run. And then Alex Barnes, a 1-yard run in the end zone. So, in case anybody missed the game, those were your top scoring play. Another thing I do want to admit, though, is although there has been some rumor turmoil in Manhattan, K-State under Bill Snyder is no joke. You know, they always seem to have our number in Manhattan. And Manhattan is not a joke, y'all. So, while some things do need to be corrected, you have absolutely have to give Kansas State some credit. I did mention something about key plays, but outside of these scoring plays, the play of the game was the final Kansas State possession, where Breckenhager tipped a pass thrown by Skylar Thompson during a fourth down attempt. And basically that sealed the fate for Kansas State, and it got us our first win in Manhattan. One other thing that really bothered me is our good pal Dicker the Kicker. Ever since the USC game, Dicker the Kicker has not been the same. And I don't know what's going on. Going forward, he needs to snap out of whatever funk he's been in, man. He really, really does. And not only am I putting out an APB for Dicker the Kicker, but that APB for Chris Boyd is still out there too. So I have to see more from them going forward, because we're going to need them both, and we're especially going to need Chris Boyd to step up on Saturday to face CeeDee Lamb and Kyler Murray, because OU is no joke, man. But finally, the stats to the game. I'm so sorry, everybody. I got distracted by multiple things. There's just things that I normally do on a Tuesday night. And also, my Galaxy tablet is acting a fool right now, and I have no idea why. So, to wrap up the final stats and to wrap up Kansas State for football season, first downs, Texas won that battle with 22 to Kansas State 17, 8 for 14 on third down for us. Beating K-State's third down efficiency of 6 to 15 attempts. Fourth down, they beat us by converting 2 of 3 fourth downs. Total yards, we beat them 339 to 217. Passing, we beat them 228 yards to 110. Completion and attempts, we beat them 30 to 38. To their 11 to 25, 6.0 yards per pass, we won that. Four to their 4.4 yards per pass, no interceptions, actually no turnovers. Period for both teams. We beat them in rushing yards, 111 to 107. 29. To 39 attempts, though, we lost that. And then we beat them on average yards per rush, 3.8 to their 2.7. And we got to get the penalties under control, man. 10 penalties totaling 104 yards lost. I'm not going to put it all on them, because let's face it, Big 12 officials are morons, but there were some things I noticed. I cannot remember for the life of me off the top of my head, but we have to get this together, because I'm looking at their penalties and they have nothing, and we cannot get too excited on Saturday against Oklahoma. We have got to concentrate. So as far as one thing outside of, you know, play calling when Tim Beck is not around and Chris Boyd's assignment woes at times, I thought this game was all good around, and then we held on to the ball longer than them, 32 minutes and 30 seconds to their 27 minutes and 30 seconds. So outside of fourth down efficiency and rushing attempts, which rushing attempts really doesn't matter, well, kind of does, but we pretty much had a clean game. So, you know, this was not like the Tulsa game. You know, this is a different story. A lot of people knew that this was not going to be easy, especially when Manhattan has been our Achilles heel as far as places to play. So, you know, to anybody out there who might be listening to this podcast right now and is still not convinced that, oh, hey, we took a major step back. Tulsa was a major step back. People expected us to blow out Tulsa. This, you know, people did not expect us to win. And, you know, we did just fine. Now, granted, there's some of these things we cannot do on Saturday against Oklahoma. But to any of the, and I quote, Texas quotation mark, fans who are saying, oh, it's not good enough, just enjoy the freaking win. Just enjoy the freaking win, man. You know, we're having a much better season, the best season we've had in a while, and there's just a lot to smile about right now. And that's what we got to do. And in case anybody also forgot, you know, a lot of analysts at the beginning of the year said, you know, TCU, USC, and K-State and Manhattan and Oklahoma is going to be our toughest stretch of the year. And look at us ever since Maryland beat us again, but this time by 5 points. We did really, really good. So, you know, we beat the three teams, two of them, again, by double digits, that nobody expected us to do. And we just, you know, we made up for the Maryland loss by beating the three teams that people said we were going to have a tough time against. And, you know, we may have led the entire game against K-State and almost lost to them. But what matters, nation and Texas fans, is that we won. And for the first time in a very, very, very long time, people respect us again. So I want to give a congratulations to Bill Snyder and K-State. I root for you guys the rest of the way, you know, unless you're facing us again. And, you know, there's just a lot to smile about right now when it comes to football. And I think that's just all what we need to do. So, great win to the team. Great effort by K-State. I remember that overtime classic against them last year here in Austin. I was there, and it was fun. And I could not be more proud of this football team. And to everybody who has been patient, like I said last week in the debut episode, just sit back, relax, and just enjoy what is to come. Because I believe special things are going to come. So, with that being said, we have officially hashtag hooked KSU. And it is now time for Red River Week. So, I'm not going to get into a lot tonight for Red River Week. But I'm going to get us started. And I'm not going to trash talk. I'm not going to get like my usual trash talking self. And trust me, I have had this discussion with some of our Sooner guys on our football board multiple times this past week. But, you know, are the Sooners a top-ranked team? Yes. Are the Sooners not going to be easy? No, they're not going to be easy. And every win that they have had, you know, they did legitimately earn it. And so far, I have legitimately been wrong about Kyler Murray. But here's where I want to address something. Here is the simple truth. And this is to any Sooner fans out there who want to say Kyler Murray is the real deal. And etc. Kyler Murray hasn't played a tough defense yet. Army was their Maryland. But the difference is they won against Army. They were expected to beat Army. And they did. But they were expected to blow them out, which they didn't. So, I want to compare, and I just want to give a message to all of the Sooner fans, including some of our Sooner people on staff. Let me compare the two schedules real quick. Oklahoma's first several games up to this point, their first five games. FAU, UCLA, Iowa State, Army, Baylor. They're all cupcakes. They are all legitimately cupcakes. Iowa State, I'll give them that a little bit. Although Iowa State has kind of fell off the board a little bit, which I will address at some point in a later episode at a different day. Baylor is not terrible on offense, but defense, they still have work to do. But FAU, UCLA, and Army, they're all cupcakes, period. Look at Texas. Maryland was supposed to be easy, was supposed to be a win, but it wasn't. I'll own up to that. Tulsa, we almost blew to them. Or we almost blew that game to them. But then, this is where it gets interesting. Texas has actually beaten two top 25 teams by double digits, not once, but twice in a row. And then they beat another team that a lot of people, most analysts or so-called analysts out there, had as losses. And what ended up happening? We won. We beat three teams that were expected to beat us. We especially blew out the so-called best defense in the conference in TCU by double digits. So, before I get into to wrap this up, or get closer to wrapping this up, and, you know, later on this week, quick announcement, I'm thinking about having our very own Josh Riley, who is the lead guy for the Sooners team page, to join me maybe Friday night. The talks are still being discussed. But I just want to let every Sooner fan know that this is going to be your first test. Todd Orlando defenses are no joke. They really are not a joke. And, you know, it's not going to be easy for us either. But if there's one thing I will, you know, not be afraid to make any sooner look wrong regarding a fact, it's this season. Because this really is where it gets interesting for Oklahoma. And in the case of this year's Red River Rivalry game, it's basically best offense being Oklahoma, worst offense being ours. Best defense ours, worst defense Oklahoma's. So, one of those units who is the worst will have to step up. And whoever in that unit steps up for what I call the Yin and Yang Red River showdown will win on Saturday. But Sooner fans and Sooner Nation, seriously, this is going to be your test. And if we win, if we end up beating you guys on Saturday, I might get closer to saying we are back. I don't know yet. But this doesn't mean that the picture for the rest of the season is going to be fully painted either. But to any Sooner fan out there, I'm going to say it one more time. So far, you guys are looking good. But let's be clear here. You guys had a cupcake schedule. You haven't beaten anybody super good or super ranked. And this is your chance to do that. And if on Saturday you guys beat us, whether it's a close game or a blowout, you will have every right to rub it in. And I ain't gonna say nothing. I ain't going to say nothing, except now let's see what you can do when it matters most, whether it's in the college football playoff or any major bowl game. Let's see what you could do, because then the reputation of Choklahoma will potentially be on the horizon. It's going to be a good game, though. I am looking forward to I'm looking forward to doing the preview episode, possibly with Josh later this week. I'm looking at maybe Friday night, but it's going to be fun. And, you know, Red River rivalry is hands down the best rivalry in sports. And as always, you know, may the best team win, but I'm just going to say it right now. If we beat Oklahoma, we are going to get even closer to coming back to the Texas Longhorns that we need to be. So, with that being said, my final word of the night, one other announcement. As you all know, it is October 2nd. And not only is it October 2nd, but practices for basketball have started. I'm not talking NBA because really, I could really give a rat's ass about the NBA. It's the same damn thing. My thing when it comes to hoops is college hoops. There is one team and one conference that I will basically watch anything of when it comes to basketball. And that is Texas Longhorns and Big 12 basketball. And I am looking forward to it. So, that being said, a couple more things. After Red River Week, this coming week, starting next week, it is going to be equal attention for this guy right here. Because basketball is more my specialty, and in the case of the Big 12, it is definitely my favorite. So, be on the lookout for the upcoming season, and you know, be on the lookout for team previews. I will either A, try to have a guest on for each episode, or B, I will try to have some notes down from potential guests, and I will go through a rundown of each team in the conference. And again, I hope everybody has a good night. I hope everybody has a safe and blessed week. And from me, Tyler, Billy, and Derek, and all of us here in Longhorn Nation, and of course in Big 12 country, I want to thank you all for joining me again here tonight for episode 2 of the Longhorns Big 12 Country podcast. It has been a blast, and this is just the beginning of something special. So be safe, peace and love, and as always, this is our time, this is our fight. Hook OU, this will be our night. Till Friday, Nation, peace and love, everybody. Bye.